Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of For the Love of Freelance. LA Marks here with my trusty sidekick,
Tia, and we are on episode 5. I'm so excited. We're almost going to be at the double digits soon.
5 alive, baby. And after our New Year's episode, we got so much great feedback, and everyone is loving the year of money and everything that we have been putting out there in the past couple weeks. So much so that today we found out that we won a $10,000 grant. Congratulations, Tia.
Yay! I think when you manifest money, money just comes to your door. I mean, I'm not, knock on wood.
Wow, that was a really good knock. That wasn't even a sound effect.
I have some sound effects back here I'll be making throughout the episode.
Okay, I'm so sorry. So today is kind of a fun, different episode than the format that we've had in the past. If you follow Tia and I and Freelancing Females across various social media platforms, you may have heard of this cool app that we've been trying out called Anyone. And what it allows you to do is basically you jump in the app and you can call other people with great expertise, kind of leaders in their field, to ask them questions and get advice from them. But the trick is it's just a 5-minute limit on the call. So there's no long rambling, how do I get out of this conversation kind of energy. So the other day I got a call from a young freelancer who's a recent grad who had a few questions about how to get into and kind of level up in the world of freelance copywriting, which is my main thing that I do when I'm not hanging out with Tia working on Freelancing Female stuff. And I said, Erica, this conversation has only been 4 minutes and 49 seconds, but I feel like we should talk about this more. So we are inviting Erica Varink. Is that even how you pronounce your name?
It's so close. It's Varink. We'll take that.
Okay, perfect. So we're bringing Erica Varink.
Varink, exactly.
Which, just tell us the story of your last name, because I love it. It makes me think of like French, but like maybe with like a touch of like Austrian mystery or something. So we're inviting this young freelancer on the show, not necessarily to interview her, but to let her ask us her questions that I thought would be so relevant to all of you younger freelancers who are just starting out. So, hey, Erica.
Hi, Erica.
Hi. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm thrilled to be here.
Introduce yourself. Tell us, like, you know, where have you come from? Where did you just graduate from? Why are you here? How did you find yourself here?
I am a writer from Iowa originally, and I live in Brooklyn now. I just graduated with my MFA from Bennington, and I just started full-time freelancing 2 weeks ago.
Full lance. I like that.
Should we take that? Should we run with that?
It's a new word we should start using.
I launched a newsletter 2 weeks ago, the same time I went full-time freelance, called Long Live, which is firsthand essays about secondhand clothing.
Oh, ooh. What a good tagline.
Thank you.
We always have a hard time finding names, and I really like that one.
Thank you.
Long live, beautiful. Long live the blank. Long live the queen of secondhand clothes, obviously.
Long legs.
Long legs, I wish. I'm like a penguin.
I'm 6'2", so. We got that covered.
Okay, cool. So you're definitely going to have to ask Tia questions about the newsletter, because Tia has grown the Freelancing Females newsletter in such an incredible way. Whereas me, my newsletter, I've had it like 1,000 names since like 1996. So yeah.
Did they have newsletters back then?
Okay, so Tia, what should we do? Should we have Erica just like rapid fire, ask us questions, and whoever has a good answer, just jump in?
Yeah, let's get to it.
All right.
I have a BTS. Tia, we had a call on Anyone.
Yes, we did.
Do you know this?
I do, because I didn't have a lot of calls yet, so I remember.
Oh, awesome.
God, I know. It's so wild how connected it is.
Just ask us anything.
We're full lancers. We can do anything.
Okay, let's start Let's start with the general advice for recent graduates in the middle of a pandemic. Do you have any experiences that you can point to that would be helpful in navigating the current climate?
I graduated back in 2013, and I had come out from interning, and I had worked at JetBlue, which is an airline. And right after college, I actually went out to California for 6 months to, I didn't have a full-time job lined up right after college. I was also trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. I had studied PR and marketing. I actually went to college for music education, which a lot of people don't know.
Literally didn't remember that about you. I totally forgot.
Clearly did not do that. So I was figuring out like what type of PR I wanted to do. And when I was at JetBlue, I worked in their marketing department. So after college, I went out to California with my not boyfriend yet, but now husband after almost 10 years, and started a blog and talked a lot about food and everything and traveling. And I loved doing that. I loved talking about traveling. And that's kind of how I found my way back to JetBlue. I went to them and said, do you have any full-time jobs available? I interned with you guys, you know me. And I took a job in their corporate communications department doing event planning, which was not anywhere where I thought I'd be going. And I fell in love with it. I was able to host events for all different travel runs that they were starting and host events for the corporate department and conferences, which has really helped with the future of where I am today. And I would say when I first, you know, started at JetBlue, I had no idea that I would be where I'm at today as the founder of Freelancing Females. And my job has changed many times in between. But the first thing that I would say is try something new and don't be afraid to try something that you don't have experience in yet.
Damn. And it's so funny to hear you list those steps that you took right after college and see how, even though you didn't know this is my destination I'm walking toward, you see all of the little steps and how they kind of create a dotted line that just makes perfect sense to what you did. I'm a couple years older than Tia, Erica. And so I actually graduated like in the midst of the financial crisis or whatever they call it these days, you know, when like all the real estate, like subprime mortgages and stuff were collapsing. And it was just like chaos in like 2008, 2009, right in there. And I graduated from college a year early. So all of my friends and everyone I knew was still in college. And I moved to Sweden and became a maid in a bed and breakfast in an apple orchard in a small fishing village on the Baltic Sea. So, you know, there's like definitely directions you can go.
Nothing ever surprises me whenever you tell me stories anymore.
You know, when those traditional job opportunities are not there, like I think it's funny that both Tia and mine involved like traveling somewhere and just kind of following your instincts. I think the worst thing I could imagine doing would be trying to force yourself into staying on the path that you thought you might take in 2018 or 2019 or something, you know, like right now, as long as you are just following your instincts and you are collecting learning elements and you're not like falling deeply into debt, those are the, I think that you should just do whatever draws you and feels not like a, you know, manic choice that you're just making without consideration at all. Consider the option and sleep on it and then just go for it for sure.
I love that.
And on that, I would say LA just mentioned that you don't have to go for the traditional job that you thought. The one thing that we've learned with Freelancing Females, you go to college and there are certain majors that you can take, but once we see Freelancing Females and their paths that they're taking, it's nothing you could ever study. And the only way that they got there was trying new things and just, you know, stumbling through, seeing what you like, what you don't like, offering way too many services until you find the one that you love. So just trying out new and different areas that you never thought you could before.
So what else you got?
Can you talk about how you find clients that are right for you? And can you talk about what having a long-term client means for you as a business and for you personally?
Yeah. So I've had a lot of experience with client relationships that grow and evolve over time. I mean, actually working with Tia would be a great example of that. And I think that across the board of the few that I'm thinking of that I've had really positive relationships with for multiple years that have been economically viable and also like satisfying on a personal level, it comes with starting really slow, actually. I think it's, and this is something that I didn't ever do on purpose, but it's just now that I'm looking back how I see it. Taking on one small specific thing that you know you can really deliver on and just doing that and getting that to become a routine and then only taking on more bit by bit and when you're both ready. And another crucial thing here is the level of communication between yourself and the client and the expectation setting and these type of things that are very like soft skills, I guess people call them. Just the little that I know about you, Erica, and what you're trying to do, like I think a great way for you to start working with a client that you really respect would be to just be like, let me just do your newsletter for you, right? Like, don't let me be your like soup to nuts social media manager or something, right? Like approach someone who is doing work that you love or is doing something that is economically viable. That's the other thing. A lot of times you'll like the person, but you realize that they don't actually have a business model that's going to be able to sustain long-term work. So make sure that their business model is viable and is actually legitimate and they're not just like floating in the sky with like some dream that doesn't have any backing to it, and take on a very small thing, become excellent at that. And then when you see that the relationship is ready to level up, that's when you can do that. I've had copywriting clients like that where it's like, they actually just booked me for an event, like a one-off thing. And then they're like, oh, hey, would you be able to do this other thing? Oh, hey, like I actually have a need for this. And then it goes up from there. Or, you know, someone reaches out and they're just like, hey, I need a slogan, like one single slogan. And then you do that quickly and you really knock that out of the park. And then they can hit you up on a regular basis. And it becomes really, really fun to have those relationships where they know that, hey, they give me 48 hours. I'll come up with 100 slogans for them, no problem, in my sleep. And it's just easy, quick, expectations are there, clear communication, and you don't have to learn any new financial platforms when you work with the same clients over and over again, because they already have your EIN and your W-9 and everything.
And I will recommend that if you do start working with clients and there's a platform that you love, just stick to it, because you could have 10 clients on 10 different platforms. So I started adding into my contracts, I only work with Notion or Trello or QuickBooks, all of those different types of softwares. Or it's an extra cost because then I have to learn a whole new software. My client experience is a little different. So when I went into social media consulting and management, I had come from a tech background, and working in tech, I also worked with a lot of artists and illustrators and fashion designers for the company that I was with before I went freelance. And first and foremost, when I was going freelance, I reached out to the clients that I worked with through my full-time job and said, hey, I'm going freelance. Let me know if there's anything that we could work on a continuing basis. But as I started niching down and realizing what I wanted to do more as a freelancer and working for myself, I really loved hospitality and restaurants in New York and hotels, because I came from a JetBlue background. And I really wanted to niche down into social media work for hospitality clients. And to do so, I didn't know where to start. I hadn't ever worked for a restaurant or anything else of the sort. So I offered a restaurant in my area that I was living in, Williamsburg at the time, to do their social media for a small review and project rate. And that gave me the ability to put it into my portfolio and showcase that to potential clients in that area so that I could further expand my network through hospitality. And I just kept reaching out to different restaurants, showcasing my work, and that's how I was able to grow my network in that area. So doing the work that you want to be paid for before you get paid is a really great way to start kind of niching down to the industry that you want to be in.
Okay, the next question is something that LA and I got into right before our call ended on Anyone, which is, can you talk to me how you balance these three buckets I have in my mind of purely creative work, inbound requests, and outbound pitches or finding clients that speak to you? Maybe how that's evolved since you started this work, what it looks like now. I'd love to hear you talk about that.
Well, I guess that has to come to me too, since I'm the pitch master. This is something that just the fact that you're aware of the balance of these areas is like hugely advanced. I don't think I was really aware of this and the necessity of these buckets until probably like, I don't know, like 2019 or something. Because I always would prioritize. I would always prioritize fielding incoming inquiries and getting pitches out there. I never prioritize my own creative work. And now what I do is I actually block off the physical time in my calendar. And this always is up for, you know, tweaking and dialing the knobs when, of course, there's like when you lose a client, you need to up the outbound inquiries. When you have a new project that you want to work on creatively that's going to cost you more, you have to up these things. But it also then can be finagled by outsourcing some of the work that you need to do. Like I started getting so many inbound inquiries that it was taking up too much of my time and it like almost like emotional space. So I outsourced responding to inbound inquiries because those are simple. It's like someone, oh, hey, can I have a poem? Okay, yeah, I don't need to answer every single one of those. Someone else can answer that. So that freed up my mind for the higher level work of the outbound pitch. An outbound pitch is always going to be less success rate, a lot more back and forth and work because, you know, if you're basically just like a thing sitting on a shelf in a cute shop and someone is like, ooh, I want that, they're going to pick you up. Whereas like if you have to go up to someone and be like, would you like to buy me? Like then you have to really like show off your, you know, amenities. Wow, this story has gone in a very strange direction. I'm imagining like I'm at this boutique and I'm like this little tea kettle or something. I'm like, buy me.
I wasn't thinking of that. It was much worse.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever any of the listeners are thinking at this time, but really like the fact that you want to go into professional copywriting and you're even remotely willing to pitch yourself is huge also because copywriters are very much like not outgoing at all. So you already have a competitive edge there. I would say that you should treat your inbound inquiries like gold because they are likely to actually go through and you should be very loving with them and give them a lot of attention. And outbound, you just need to be a little tougher, you know, because people are going to reject you. But you need to have this like kind of persistence with it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work and just move on, you know. So as you become more in demand, as your prices go up and these kind of things, that changes the way that you deal with things. Like right now with freelancing females, if someone writes in with an inquiry, they want to work with us, like 5 years ago when we first started, I would have been like, oh my God, hi, who are you? Like, let me talk to every single person that writes in. Now it's like someone writes in, I'm like, yeah, who are you? Like, why should we work with you? Like, don't waste my time now. So
very nicely though, very nicely.
No, but really because you do, when you get so many inbounds, then yes, you have to kind of be a little more tough with them. You can't give everyone 15 minutes of your time.
Right.
But when you're starting out, you want to really like learn. It's almost like free market research. Anyone who inquires with you, you really want to dig in there and like learn why are they reaching out to you? How are they finding you? You know, you can treat them as their own research project. Just do make sure as a writer, like you're already doing, that you, and really any creative field can use this advice, make sure that you are spending some time, like what Tia was saying with doing the blog and doing the portfolio projects, investing in those beautiful things that you can, that give you joy and can also be shared to show off what you're great at.
Yes. And time is money. So I would say spend time on those outbound pitches, spend them on the inbound pitches, but remember that 15 minutes, a bunch of those calls is going to add up. So what I try to do is I batch my days. Like Mondays, I don't have meetings. Monday's the day that I'm going through my inbox, getting all my emails out. Tuesdays, I have all my calls because calls are very disorienting. You hop on a call, mm-hmm. then you have to do all this stuff afterwards or prepare for before, and then you can't get back to your regular work. So I try to have my calls on one day. And then creative work, I try to, like LA does, put into your calendar, like, this is time I'm spending on just ideating, because you just never know what could come up with. When I was doing freelance consulting and social media, I started doing creative work on the side of strategy, and a strategy deck became like my bread and butter that we made the most money off of.
That is a great deck.
It was a great deck, and it was one of my favorites.
It was almost like a book, really.
Yeah, it was like a social media Bible that we gave to our clients. But that was our highest paid freelance work, and it also became my favorite because it was like, here it is. You can go do your social media now with this Bible that I gave you, and I don't have to do any social media management work. And I decided, like, that's something that I don't want to do anymore. So creative thinking and having the room for that is so very important to your freelance work.
That's really helpful. That's a perfect answer. In line with that question, I have a question about if you can recall the first project or the first client relationship you ever had that made you feel, okay, I'm in the right place. I can do this.
Ooh, fun one. You know, what's funny. The first one I think of is actually a relationship that was like pretty toxic. But it was important for me because it was a client that I found all on my own and that gave me a lot of freedom to be hyper creative and do whatever I wanted and trusted me to be an expert and paid me the most money I'd ever made at that time. So there's like a lot of positives there, even though it was like this very sort of like the gender relationship dynamic. He was like an older man and blah, blah, blah. Like that was a little bit flawed. But honestly, like as a woman freelancer, like we have things that are against us and we have things that are for us. So I think I kind of like played that card up a little bit to get an in and to just get more respect and more kind of, I don't know, like power, I guess, and get a really good freelance client, doing like events and creative work and getting him on social media for the first time and really just like building a whole promotional existence for him out of nothing. That was huge for me because it was like a really respected, established, old school business that was like coming into the 21st century for the first time. And I got to like call the shots and create color schemes and like almost like, I don't even think it was called, did people have brands before 2010? I don't even know, but it was like build his whole online persona. And that was so satisfying for me. And the audience loved it. And it resulted in an increase of interest in younger people coming into this old school business. And I was like, oh, I crushed that. And that was awesome. And then immediately after that, I moved to New York. Hey!
Yeah, and met me. I think one thing that we should talk about versus a longtime client after LA was talking was I was thinking, you know, I've had wonderful longtime clients, but there's just certain things that you need to look out for in those clients, which you can kind of suss out in your first, you know, few emails. There's a lot of red flags. There's also a lot of green flags. And then also in a 15-minute call before you start working with them, which I highly recommend because that's when you really get, you know, that nugget if they're going to be a good client or not. But I think trust is one of them. Are they going to pay on time is another. That's going to make them a long-time client because I like money and I like getting it on time. You shouldn't have to be dragging yourself. But also giving you the room for creativity in your work, because if your client starts putting you into a very specific box, then you're going to regret taking them on as a client. You're going to get burnt out pretty quickly, and you're also going to kind of get annoyed by your client, and that won't allow for a long term.
Totally. That's something that people talk about in the Facebook group so often, and it makes me so upset. It's like, you should never hire someone thinking that you're going to completely control everything that they do. You should hire people that have expertise outside of what you can do. That's what I do every time I try to outsource a little chunk of any of the work that I do. I'm looking for someone who can do something that I can't. Of course, I can give them guidance and feedback as well because I have experience. But yeah, so basically, I think what Tia and I are trying to say, Erica, is like, anyone who wants to work with you, if you're not sure and you're just like, you need a little bit of reinforcement or guidance or someone in your corner, just like tell them to that we're your agent and that we have to approve them first, and that we'll check them out for you.
I appreciate that. Should we do money questions since it is the year of money? Do you guys want to get into it?
Oh yeah.
Okay, great. This is something
one money question, just one.
Just one money question.
My favorite and least favorite thing to talk about.
I know. It'll be light. Something we talked about on our call, Ella and I, was she lists her rates just very openly on her website, which I find inspiring and sort of like a call to action. So I'm wondering if you can talk to me as someone who's starting out and has a rate that I've worked toward, and if you can give me advice on how you tier your rates, how you communicate your rates. Is there ever a situation in which you make an exception for a friend or family? You talk about how that relationship has changed.
Friends and family cost more because they're more work, is what I've learned.
Almost always that is true. Like, so I feel like the only friends and family project Tia and I have ever done together that didn't end up costing more was my fiance. And that was because he like truly does not care about the thing. He just knew he needed it. And it was like, that's amazing. So it's like, oh, sure, I can give you a friends and family rate. But like, how much do you care? Like, do you care a lot? Like, no, sorry. But like, if you just like don't care, then yes. But I mean, this is kind of Tia's like claim to fame of what really like kicked freelancing females into high gear was this idea of transparency around rates and freelancers knowing. So I mean, in the spirit of that, if you want to share what your rate is right now and like what your service is, tell us like, what are you offering? How many years of experience do you have at that? And like, what's the rate that you set? And we'll give you like some live feedback.
Perfect. I am offering editorial copywriting, newsletter writing, product description, web copy, brand story work at $90 an hour. And I have a year and a half of experience and I have a master's degree. So that's where I'm coming from.
Tia, what do you think?
I think your rate is a really great starting rate, but I would say that not everything that you listed should be at the same rate. Because some things take more time, energy, research than others on that list.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, $90 an hour, when I was at your level of experience, I would have like puked with joy if someone would have paid me that. Of course, inflation is at 6% a freaking year. So like $90 an hour back in 2008 was probably like $190 an hour back then. But yeah, I mean, I think 90 is really, really solid. And anyone that respects you enough to pay that is great. And yeah, like Tia said, there's some nuance to be there. I do a lot of package work when it comes to writing. And so people will sometimes prefer to pay a package rate. If I was a typical like small business client, I might not love the idea of paying $90 an hour for like product descriptions. That seems like more of a creative writing type of rate for my experience. But then again, with the corporate clients, with really good corporate clients, they have just such totally different budgets, just completely different world than a lot of the small business clients that I like prefer to work with, because I'm like, you know, love the small business, love the mom and pop shop, love the artists, love all that stuff. Right now I charge $150 an hour for just, you know, you need some slogans, that kind of thing. So I feel like it's like, so not even that different.
We should probably talk about hourly versus project-based too, because if you start getting better at something that you're doing, then you shouldn't be paid less.
Yeah.
So I love project-based rates.
Yeah, seriously. And it's like, sometimes you kind of can get a much better deal for your talent and for your education level by being like, okay, so like, what do you need? Okay, so here's what you've just ordered, and here, like, tell me what you're looking to pay for this. You can actually ask the client, like I just did a copywriting project not too long ago where I was just, they told me what they wanted, and I was like, cool, so what's your budget? And they gave me a budget that was way higher than what I would have asked for. So you can always try that, and there's no harm in that. You know, there's always a kind of back and forth between the client and the
freelancer,
you know, whatever. Is the two parties that are working together, there's always this kind of like push and pull of who's going to be the first person to say a number. And just the fact that you can say a number and say it confidently and know that you can puts you in the right mindset to make more and to not be so anxious about it. So you're very much in the right space, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, and putting your rates on your website kind of helps you to sift out the people who are looking for a $30 an hour person. You don't want to have to be dealing with that all the time, but you could say my rates start at, you don't have to put this is the final number, because you could have a big corporate client coming to you. And that's going to be a whole different ball game and a whole different amount of work. But for me, as the client side, I love project-based rates that my freelancers give to me, because I don't get so worried about, oh my God, how many hours is this going to take? I have no idea what the end rate will be. And that can scare me off as a client. So just something to think about.
That makes sense. I mean, my follow-up is, even though I have a whole portfolio of like editorial work, of articles I've written, which we can talk about maybe eventually, but my copywriting portfolio is slim. So I'm interested in what your response would be in getting new clients. Is there merit in me doing sort of like a TIA situation where I go to a client and say, hey, I'm trying to build out a portfolio. I love your brand. I love your work. Let's make something happen. And maybe it's less than 90.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because that's just more fun too. Like if you're looking for more work and there aren't people knocking on your door, and you could make a networking connection, like you could gift someone a blog post totally free and just be like, link to my site and let me put this in a portfolio. And if someone needs a reference, like, and that is, you will probably have a great time doing it. And I've read some of your writing, like the article about how to dress like a Nora Ephron character. And some of these pieces are like, you have such an incredible voice and a sense of humor that the more that you have, the more that the right client that you type of that you want to work with is going to read those and just be like, oh, I have to work with this person. I don't care if it's $20 above what I was hoping to spend.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So we should probably just do like one more question and then wrap, because my fiance went to KFC and got their new vegetarian fried chicken for us. And it's outside of the recording studio and I'm kind of freaking out right now.
Can I ask you about the newsletter? I feel like that would be a good.
Yes, yes. Let's end with the newsletter. That's perfect.
Okay. I did famously launch a newsletter 2 weeks ago and famously. I'm so interested, Tia, in what you've learned it takes to create a consistently compelling newsletter.
A lot of trial and error, I would say, for us. But first and foremost, asking your audience and the people who you want to be in your audience what they'd be interested in reading. There's so many newsletters out there. So why do they want to read yours is a really great question. What are they interested in? What type of vintage are they looking for? What can you put in the newsletter that people aren't just going to find browsing through the internet? How can you make their lives easier. That's one of the biggest things for me with newsletters is I'm going to sign up for your newsletter if you're finding these great tidbits for me that I don't have to do. And you don't have to write about the same thing every week. You can try it out, see what resonates with people, what doesn't. Like, we'll have a newsletter flop every once in a while, or we'll be surprised by one. We just had a newsletter that did incredibly well that we never thought would be of interest to people. So I think you're always going to be learning. It's going to take time to grow a newsletter. We really had to nurture a community before we started our newsletter, but getting others on your list and kind of giving them an incentive to share with a friend, or even having a little giveaway to start off your newsletter, is a great way to just boost your numbers first and foremost. And then Facebook groups and sharing about your newsletter in different groups that are like-minded was one of the best ways that we were able to grow in the beginning.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that a couple things that the Freelancing Females newsletter does that I think keep it really fun is really specific little sections like a newspaper would have, right? So it's not just like one long stream of consciousness. It's like, this is your tip. This is the editorial letter. This is the discount of the week. I would love to see your newsletter include something really cool, like maybe you even start like an online shop where like every week something that you found at a thrift store is like featured, and people, like, if the first person that opens it gets a chance to like get the piece that you found in some obscure place. That would be amazing. Keeping your personality very strong. Like, I tell you, when I try to just speak in a more generic, like, community, everyone will like this type of way in the Freelancing Females newsletter, no one cares, no one notices it, it's like whatever. When I actually like am a little vulnerable, or like crack a joke, or like share a more specific opinion, people will write back. People will share, yeah, like a screenshot in their stories and be like, thank you. You know, like, so the more honest you can be and the more like truly yourself and not just trying to like please a vague audience, the better it seems to resonate with people. Oh, and wait, one more thing. Incentivize the signups, like Tia said. Yeah, like there should be, you should do a giveaway. Like, oh, you'll do like a, you know, shopping day with someone, or some ongoing thing where like anyone who signs up for the newsletter is entered to win like a monthly wardrobe critique, or I don't know, something like really cool like that. People will jump on that. And shout out to our partner Norby, who actually is what we're working with to continue to grow our newsletter and get people in our community more tight with actual phone numbers so we can text them. Norby is a great way for people that are like having a platform that's trying to grow to really understand their audience more. So I'll send you a link to them. You could actually consider using them to grow the list.
Perfect.
Thank you for doing this experiment with us. Tia, what did you think? Did you like it?
I loved getting asked questions, so anytime. No, but thank you so much, Erica. It was a lot of fun getting to know you more versus just 5 minutes on anyone. Feel free to email us if you have any more questions, but good luck on your new endeavors, and I think there's going to be a lot of great copywriting in your future.
Thank you. This is a dream for me.
I've been pondering my orb and I see it. I really see that for you. All right, y'all. Thank you for another great episode of Freelancing Females Podcast for the love of freelance. Thank you to our editor, Michael. Thank you to our guest, Erica Varink, who has the awesome newsletter Long Live, which we will link to in the show notes. And thank you to my beautiful, wonderful, forever bestie, Tia Myers-Grado, for being by my side.
Love you, Brickway.